Hi and welcome to the Homeopathy Health Show. I'm Atik Ahmadbhatti, a fourth generation homeopath with over 25 years of professional experience and practice in this field of healing. The Homeopathy Health Show is the online voice of homeopathy around the world, promoting and raising awareness of this truly unique complementary system of healing, which is suitable for all ages, young and old. Every week, I invite guests from the world of homeopathy to come and share their experiences, their work, offer insights, and essentially talk all things homeopathy. Why not visit www.liketreatslike.co.uk and click on the radio and podcast button to listen to the latest episodes. So let's begin today's show here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Homeopathy Health Podcast here on UK Health Radio. So how have you been? I certainly hope you've had a pleasant week and I hope you're in good health. And as always, I hope and pray it remains that way. I've had a very, very busy week, actually. It's been one of those weeks where I've had several guests recording them for my podcasts and getting to know them. And it's been a fascinating week, actually, to be honest. I've found that talking to so many eminent homeopaths from around the world, it's creating this virtual global community of homeopaths. And, you know, that's the power of medium, isn't it? That's the power of radio. It's the power of podcasts. It's a brilliant. Things can't get better. Or should I say, things can only get better, which does remind me of something which I'll go off on tangent. So I'll stop myself before I even go there. You know what I'm like. But I'm delighted today to welcome Dr. Sharon Ali from India. She is a very passionate doctor of homeopathy and has dedicated so far 19 years of her life to natural healthcare. She is a nationally recognized homeopath. Dr. Sharon is committed to empowering everyone with safe and effective healing tools and techniques. Her recent appearance in a national newspaper highlights her exceptional work with over 200 mentally and physically challenged children, showcasing her compassion and dedication to the craft itself. And that is actually something I will be speaking to Dr. Sharon on in some detail in today's podcast. So without further ado, Dr. Sharon Ali, thank you so much for being on today's Homeopathy Health Podcast.
Thank you, Atik, for this opportunity to share what I have. And I hope that you all enjoy what we have to share between the two of us.
I think people will certainly enjoy it because, as I said to you just offline, just before the podcast, you've surpassed me in the number of views on TikTok videos. And I just feel it's not fair because I'm the one who posted it. But hey, there you go, you know, all good. So do tell me about yourself, you know, your journey to homeopathy. It's always fascinating to hear different accounts of how, you know, successful doctors of homeopathy actually came across this science and this field of healing itself.
Yes. I was very sure after I finished my 12th standard, which is like a pre-grad, I was very sure that I wanted to take up homeopathy as my career. I was inspired by a few doctors back then who were in my village. So I decided to take it up and I went around looking for a good college and I found one. And yes, I started it knowing that I'm going to be a homeopath. So the first BHMS course that I did, which is of 5.5 years, was done in a small place called Nasik. Over there, I used to spend a lot of time in the library and I used to read a lot of these very small, tiny pamphlets, which I, for some reason, I don't see these books out very easily nowadays, but they were very nice, small written pamphlets by the old authors of homeopathy. That was my first introduction to homeopathy and my interest in homeopathy. After that, I worked under different doctors and different schools of doctors for around maybe around 4 years or so. I did not have my own practice. I went and I worked with different doctors, and I was learning what we know now as the constitutional way of treating. So, you know, you go and you see, you take the history of a patient and you try to find out the emotional state and the mental state and how the patient grew up as a child and then as adult, and then what they like in eating, what they don't. So that's the way I used to first prescribe for my first, say around 12 years of practice. And yes, I was good at it, and I yielded a lot of good results during that time. But during that time, I kept on exploring. Like, you know, you have this learning curve. You go, you learn from someone, and then you tend to get an idea of how to use that particular method. And then you go on and you go to another person who has a different approach in homeopathy. So I kept doing this, and I've gone to many different schools of homeopathy. And I found my cases getting more and more complicated. I found that for some reason I was attracting like the most gross pathology that one would want to deal with. I was, you know, people with gangrene and people with cancer, and the more challenging the cases got, the more I had to study. So it became like a desperation to study and study and study. And that's what I've been doing. I've just been really, really studying and trying my best to treat via homeopathy. I have not limited myself to any particular way of treatment. I prefer having all my tools out. So yes, that's a little about me.
That's a fascinating journey that you've just relayed there. And it's been a bit of a roller coaster as well, hasn't it? Trying to juggle patients, treatment, and of course, knowledge itself, literature, yes. Books.
Yes, yes, very true. And Arthik, I think that this journey never ends. And yet at the same time, I think that it's our failures that are the most... it's what drives us to, it's a success, of course, encourages us. And our failure is the thing that drives us to study more. And then, you know, sometimes we study and then we say, you know, call up that patient who was not getting better. And then you give the medicine because you've studied it and you've worked hard. And then the patient who you've been struggling with for so many months, they suddenly just like bounce back because you've got the right, you've read the right book and you have gone through the right literature at the right time. So that's been what I have been doing all this while.
It's the nicest feeling, isn't it, Sharon, when a patient calls and they say, you know, and initially when you see them and they're suffering and they've been trying to look for, you know, a place to go where they can be healed and their ailments can be removed and all the anxiety that's, of course, associated with being unwell. Yes, yes. It's such a nice feeling, isn't it, when they say, "Oh, thank you," and it's done. And I mean this in the humblest way. I don't mean we're anything special. God forbid, that's not what I mean. But I mean it's just a nice feeling that we've been given an opportunity to be able to help people. That's what I mean. And God blesses the results, and the results are, of course, that they find health.
Yes, very true. So I used to have this thing when I was I'm talking about like. You know, say 10, 15 years ago, I used to even go and stay over at patients' homes during the last stages of their life. And, you know, in palliative care cases, I used to go and stay with them. And, you know, they would say, "Doctor, she can't breathe. Is there anything you can do? Doctor, she's uncomfortable. Her legs are too swollen. Is there something?" So during those times, one realizes that when one person is in pain, it's the whole family that suffers. It's not just, and when you relieve one person, you are also relieving everyone around them. The small things that they can do on their own, the small things that they're independent of, or you save them from, can make such a large ripple. And I think that is what pushes me. That is what makes me really happy, because I know that, you know, not only have I helped them, but I've helped everyone around them too.
It's interesting, isn't it? The fragility of life. I know we're going to go off tangent, but hey, it's got to be said. But, you know, yes. Even the strongest, let's say the strongest man in the world, or, you know, a president of a country, or whoever it is, yeah, a top ranking public figure or a celebrity or whatever. But the fragility of life is, of course, you can be successful in life and you can do whatever it is that you want to do and achieve with effort, of course, you know, hard work, commitment, dedication, that, you know, that goes without saying. But sickness is one of those things, as it's so overpowering, and it can create such a disorder even in the most confident individual. And that's actually one of the beauties where one of the beauties of homeopathy, and where that comes in, is by listening to the patient, by counseling the patient alongside the homeopathic medicines themselves, makes a world of difference to somebody who has been suffering, you know.
Yes, very true. So something that I've experienced with my practice, which I would love to share, is how people's lives can change when you treat them for their emotional states, and how their decision making changes, and how that completely revolutionizes their life. You know, there was a patient I had who had come to me because his father had cancer. And his father didn't survive. His father passed on, but his father was a very, very dominating and dictatorial person. And he was like that till the end. Only in the last 1-2 days, he, you know, apologized to everyone and said, "I'm really sorry for the things I've done. And please forgive me, because I know I'm not going to live longer." And he passed away. Now, this gentleman who was the son was totally lost. He had never been given decision-making powers. You know, he didn't know where the money was, what the father was doing, how he was earning. And suddenly the whole responsibility came on him. And he was like buckling under the pressure of the entire responsibility, because he was never allowed to take a decision. Now, when he came to me, he didn't come to me. In fact, the treatment ended when his father passed away. And I told his wife, "I think, you know, you should get him to me, because I may be able to help him." Now, this gentleman started making a lot of wrong decisions in his business. And I kept on encouraging his wife to get him. I said, you know, it'll really make a difference. Please get him over. I know exactly how to help him. So after a few months of going underground, he came to me, and I prescribed some medicine to him, and he started making better decisions in business. It's funny, but then, you know, there's sometimes these things can make a huge difference in a person's way of dealing with things. Then he had some problems with his sisters because of, you know, the breakup of the property. And I told his wife again, "Please get him back. He needs medicine." And he again came back. And now the relation with his sisters is really much better. So sometimes I feel that, you know, more also along with counseling, when you know that certain things where the emotion overrides a person, and you can treat that and balance them out to make right decisions, things clear up, and, you know, they are happier in their lives in so many ways.
Mental health conditions and emotional imbalance or emotional instability is rampant. Sadly, there's two schools of thoughts here. You know, one is that it was very taboo, and now people are very openly being able to speak about it. So it's always been there. But the other side is that actually it's an emerging condition. I'd say it's 50-50, you know, it's 50% of, yes, it's been there, and those who had suffered quietly. And now, because it's openly discussed on social media and everywhere, you know, in the news and through even podcasts, you know, through radio mediums, people are now able to accept it and be able to seek help for it. And then the other 50 is just the stress of life itself. I mean, we're bombarded, aren't we, with messages after message and you know, television and radio and mobile phone. Wow, you know, that's can't leave home without it, can't live without it type of thing.
You know? You can't.
But it's not good. And I say, of course, you know, I've said this so many times, but there's so much positive. But because of the sheer speed of light that we're all traveling at, you know, as far as our week goes, it's not good for the body, because there's no time actually to rest. Even sleep is done in a, I've had many patients who said, oh, we need to get sleep, but we've got so much to do. And even that's an anxiety that, oh, I have to sleep.
Yes. I look at it in another way. I feel that, you know, in today's world, we are getting much more than we did. Okay. And I think we have, all of us have moved ahead and progressed in life in whatever way. There's certain things where everyone has progressed, and there is one of the things I usually suggest to my patients when they come to me with depression is that I tell them, please do something which will instill gratitude in you. I think that it's the lack of gratitude that causes a lot of mental health issues.
That's a very interesting take on it, actually. That's very interesting. Perhaps we take everything for granted.
Yes, I think so. And I think that, you know, if you can go and read a story in an orphanage, or you can take your children out there and help them interact with the people in old age homes. And I think that if you can do anything, which is not just giving physically, you know, giving clothes and food and things like that, but spending time with those who are abandoned or spending time with those who have less than you, I think that will relieve a lot of depression. I feel that we, you know, the best way to not feel depressed is to see and realize that you have much more than someone else does.
I 100% agree with you. And the reason I do is because my family and I, we, most of our evenings are taken up with voluntary work, helping, for example, the homeless community, raising money for charity, cleaning up even a courtyard of a church, and having social meetings with different faiths and you know, going out on the streets, especially in the new year and Christmas time, purchasing good, high-quality gifts and going out and seeking those who were, you know, finding it difficult and were on the street, and gifting them and spending time with them and sitting with them. And I think you've said something very pertinent, that is what's needed, because then when you come home and you reflect on what you have, and everything is on tap, isn't it? You know, it's such a luxurious life, no matter what level you're at. And then you look at what you've just seen. That's gratitude. It makes you grateful that, oh, wow, you know, I've got this and this. And imagine being in that position. I wouldn't survive a day, I think.
Yes, I think that's the one way to treat sadness.
Absolutely.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
What's your experience with mental health conditions?
Yeah, there are three types of people I come across. So as you know, I've been treating the physically and mentally disabled children and we've been working on them, and we've been doing a very nice job. We're getting very, very encouraging results. And I love the work I'm doing. So when we actually see children who have mental issues, they are some of the happiest children, huh? No, they're not sad. I think the rest of the world around them is, but then I think they're happy. You know, they're the sweetest of people. And there is a lot of scope for homeopathy for what we consider actual mentally disabled children. And I also see the other kind who have lived in luxury and I think they're just bored. So there's another kind who I think create their own problems. And they don't actually have problems, so they create it. And there are another set of people who have issues which need homeopathic support. And then they bounce back and they come back to normal. Now, for the ones that are really, really, psychiatric cases like schizophrenia or manic depressive or OCDs, I have seen a 50-50 result. Now, this is the truth, Atik. I like being truthful about what I do. So statistically, I've seen 50% of them improve completely and just bounce back and they don't need any medicine and then they can live a normal life and they don't start hearing voices or they don't go into those fits of rage or manic depression. But there are some who we've not been able to cure. So my take on mental health is that go to the closest homeopath. If the doctor can help you, then you are saved of a lifelong medication which would dull you down, make you lose your memory, not let you enjoy life, and numb you. Because we see the other side, right? That when you take those medicines which are for depression or for schizoid patients, it's very numbing. They don't feel joy, they don't feel sorrow. So they don't even feel the joy, right? So
absolutely.
It's quite painful to see that state. Some people cannot do without having that medicine. Homeopathy has all the answers, Atik. Homeopathy has all the answers. It's us as humans who fail. It's us.
Very aptly said, which actually moves me on to something you've just mentioned here, that you've treated over 200 mentally and physically challenged children. So do share with me what was involved and the types of conditions perhaps that you've been successful in helping these children with.
So we've treated everything from deafness, blindness, epilepsy, all types of epilepsy, absent seizures, general seizures, all the small types of epilepsy. We've treated microcephaly, Down syndrome, cerebral palsy. Yeah, we've touched almost all the conditions that I know technically. Duchenne's muscular dystrophy. We've treated quite a lot of conditions. 10% have not improved because when we actually started asking the patients and we went deeper in, we realized that they had improved, but then the parents wanted more. Okay. But there were signs of improvement and these cases do take time to improve, you know. So if you're taking a follow-up after 15 days, you cannot expect miracles in all of them. But we did see signs of improvement in all of them. Of course, in cases where there's microcephaly, no, the brain size does not increase. But motor function increases, epilepsies go down, they start recognizing things, their understanding improves. There's a lot of small changes that you can see. Bladder control, bowel control improves. So these are patients who are really, really bad. I'm not talking about who are not as bad. Okay, these are patients who really need help or who are totally dependent on their parents. I think the scope of homeopathy over here is that we have remedies which I wish were recognized by other schools of medicine. One is we have medicines which work on head trauma when the child is born and if they have forceps deliveries, or if they were stuck in the canal, or if they had a difficult labor. We have remedies for head injury. We have remedies for delayed oxygen supply. We have remedies for trauma to the mother. We have remedies which help with the side effects of TORCH, that is your toxoplasmosis, cytomegalovirus, rubella, so hepatitis B. So all these, the side effects that come onto the child if the parents are suffering from it, or if the mother has suffered emotional or mental or physical trauma during pregnancy, it can be treated with homeopathy. So I think that the scope of homeopathy is there because there are lots of things that other schools know as causes, but homeopathy has remedies for those causes. Now, in other schools, you know the cause, but you're going to treat only what you see. In homeopathy, we know the cause, then we know what to treat it with.
So do you find that, are you becoming well known as far as an expertise in this specific field, or have you focused more of your time and energy on such cases, challenging cases?
So I think this was an opportunity we got to work with Dr. Sunirmal Sarkar. He is a very well-read and a very successful homeopath in Calcutta. And as you mentioned, Dr. Gaurang also has been his student, and so have I. And here we have, under the guidance of Dr. Sunirmal Sarkar, worked and seen these patients. Now, this was an opportunity to help them. I have not limited myself to any particular disease per se, but yes, we have now got more experience in physically and mentally challenged children.
Really commendable, actually, Sharon, what you're doing here. And I think, step by step, of course it improves lives, but the fact that, you're able to give time to this for those who are suffering for no fault of their own is yes, highly commendable, you know. I congratulate
you
on
so
that.
Much.
And
congratulations. I must tell you, it's all free. It's all free, huh? This is
amazing.
A completely free, there's no money taken from the patients. The entire project has been done as a service to humankind. Yes.
That makes it even more commendable. I wish you great success, actually, with that. May you go on to help hundreds of thousands of children and adults who perhaps are suffering from, very challenging diseases and disabilities.
Thank you so very much. We are hoping to continue doing workshops while we are treating. So these are like physical workshops where the patients do come, and while they are being treated, we discuss their particular problem and we discuss our understanding of the remedy and we treat it. And the students get to see the follow-ups too. So they see the improvement in the patients, which gives them more confidence in homeopathy, one. And hopefully, we have only been able to treat 200, which is nothing. It's like a drop in the ocean of these kind of cases. So if we can create more doctors who can treat more patients and, make this one drop into an ocean where all the homeopaths are capable of treating such cases, it would be really nice.
So what are you currently involved with as far as cases are concerned, or is it just a mixed bag every day?
Mixed bag every day. I see a lot of hormonal disturbances. So I see a lot of PCOD, thyroid. There's something called men's disease where you have multiple endocrino cancers. So for some reason, I get a lot of these cancer cases. I get kidney failure, parathyroid issues, renal conditions. And I do get the regular cold and coughs also. I get I get some cases of epilepsy. In fact, I've made a list of the cases I've treated. I think I've treated around 500 different types of diseases till now, or more.
Oh, wow. That's not bad going, eh?
Yeah, I've put my hands everywhere, Arpik. I feel we should as homeopaths, because when we study materia medica, materia medica is not just for one type of disease. And usually there are multiple organs affected in every person. So, you know, it doesn't make sense if you treat one without the other. It's one body.
Hmm. You know, I was going to ask you, Dr. Sharon, about hormonal issues, because they seem to be prevalent, fertility issues, both male and female, or sterility issues, should I say. What's your take on that? What's your, is there a causative agent, a causative factor here, or is this lifestyle and chemicals, pesticides, insecticides, you know?
Okay. For this, I'm going to be going to, so I have a case paper I made for patients who come to me and want treatment for their particular hormonal issue. And I'm going to tell you how long the questionnaire is only for past history. So when we take the past history, we are looking for causes. Okay. Now, when we take the past history for even a hormonal issue, we take a history of mumps. We take the history of digestive infections, gastritis, diarrhea, typhoid. We take the history of any liver complaints like jaundice or again typhoid or gallbladder issues. We even take injury to the abdomen. So if they've had accidents or things like that, or injury to the head. I just recently treated a child who had been thrown up by his father and hit the ceiling. And after that, he got diabetes. So because and that is because of injury to the pituitary. Huh? So there are multiple causes. It's not one. The medicine for hair growth, like minoxidil, you have, sexually transmitted diseases which cause issues. There's tuberculosis, there's COVID, there is oral contraceptives which cause problems. You have malnutrition, these weight loss and weight gain programs, these crash diets which cause a lot of hormonal issues. There's so many things. It's not just pesticides. No, it's not.
It is indeed it's an amalgamation, isn't it, of different things factors, you know, which is, I suppose, part of, has become sadly part of life, isn't it, because of circumstances which we cannot get out of. But nutrition plays a very key role here as well, doesn't it? We're all eating bad eating habits as such, not enough greens, the age-old thing, not enough greens, rather chew on a chicken leg or a bit of meat.
It's really sad. Not just that, I agree with you completely out there, but as I said, these. So I had, we've been learning about phytohormones, right? About your phytoestrogens and phytoprogesterons and medicines also made which work like hormones, but then they're made from regular dietary products. So I feel that people should know what they're eating. And if they overdo anything, if they overdo their soya powders when they are going to the gym, or if they overdo anything, it will lead to hormonal issues. Even the chicken that they eat, if they're going on a protein diet. So I agree with you that one is the greens and the other is fresh food. I don't know why it's gone out of the market. People don't eat fresh food.
Which is, you're absolutely right. I was actually just thinking of fresh food. That's probably because I haven't had my dinner, but hey, I'm not going to go off on a tangent. I'm going to control myself and stay on script. Okay.
Yes.
But that's the beauty of a podcast. You can, you're allowed to go off on tangent. That's the conversation. Now, where are you based specifically? Which area of India are you? In the north, I believe, yes?
Well, I am from the northeast. I am from the northeast. So that's the northeast means more towards China, more towards Bhutan, more towards Nepal. But I stay in the west, just bang opposite. So I stay in the West, which is in Maharashtra, in Pune. Yeah, so that's where I practice.
Nice place, a green place, is it, Pune?
It's very nice. I think it's getting overcrowded now because it is that nice. It's very nice. Lovely. We have very nice mangoes. Please come over.
Delicious. Definitely. For mangoes, you know, we don't get many mangoes in the UK. Well, they're all imported here, anyway, so there's none in the UK, of course.
Here it's an everyday meal.
Not too good for those who are diabetic, though, eh?
No, it's not. But you know, if you have mango whole, it's okay for diabetics. If you have it in a juice, it's not good. Because when you have it whole, you're having it with fiber, it's more difficult to digest, and it doesn't give that sugar high. So if you have mango, have it whole.
I will have plenty of those as soon as I get my hands on some.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Now, I have some questions for you. Some downtime questions. Tell me, yes. Do you have any favorite remedy or remedies? Your personal favorites as such.
My personal favorite. Okay. One of my favorite remedies, this is for this generation, is Abrotanum.
Okay, interesting choice.
It's my favorite remedy. I feel if I don't know anything in a case, I'll give them Abrotanum.
And why? You have to justify that now. You've opened something up now. I'm going to prod you until you give me some more info.
Okay, so Abrotanum is the king of remedies for suppression. If you've taken any set of antibiotics for cough, cold, diarrhea, typhoid, pneumonia, and after that you've developed any symptoms, Abrotanum clears that.
So it works better than other remedies in that sphere, huh?
Trust me, I've done that too many times. Now, I'm telling you, I will not say anything unless I've tried and tested it. Otherwise, I don't open my mouth.
Okay. And any others alongside that?
Torula. Torula is an excellent remedy for almost any kind of allergy. Anything. Rhinitis, eczemas, allergy to food, anything. Torula. You're asking me for specifics and I'm giving you, huh?
Interesting. It's for the knowledge and education of the listeners, because it just goes to show you, actually, that there's so many there's thousands of homeopathic medicines or remedies available to homeopaths from around the world. And that's the beauty, because there is no disease that then cannot be, at least one cannot try to help a patient with. That's the magnitude and the sphere of homeopathy. And it's fascinating because, you know, you've referred to two remedies which are not that common. That's why I was asking you to give more details, because they're not commonly referred to. They're not like arnica, belladonna, sulfur, rustox, you know, they're not. So that's what makes it more interesting, I think.
One thing, again, I said, because I'm saying Abrotanum and Torula, I'm just coming to you from another place. These are remedies which I've used in my clinic, and these are remedies which I can swear by because I have treated so many patients with it. So these are not just because I have read about it. It's something I have experienced. Yes.
I've got a name for you. I think I'm going to start calling you the homeopathic Sherlock Holmes.
Yes, you may.
Difficult cases.
Yes.
Yeah, for 100%, that's Sherlock Holmes, you know. Now, the question is, which one? Because there's been many in history, haven't there? Especially on the movies. in the movies, by the way. You know?
Oh, I love them.
Okay. The British one or the one with Robert Downey Jr.? Here we go off tangent.
not the Robert Downey Jr. one. I like the British ones.
Ah, thank you. Yes. Benedict, dear Benedict, the original Sherlock Holmes, yes?
Oh, I love the way he talks. I don't mind just sitting and listening to him.
Well, one day he may be on this podcast.
Oh!
You never know.
Please, I would love to hear him, really. And I think he's got a very high IQ, even if he's not Sherlock Holmes.
Yes, I think absolutely.
Very intelligent, yes.
Now, next question for you. Your favorite books or book or books? If it's several, then it's three. You're allowed maximum three. Like your top books, you know?
This is not fair. This is not fair. Boric.
Okay.
Alex Binot.
The classics. And,
yes. I can swear by them, and I can see, you know, one thing I must tell you, you're again a little tangential, but let me tell you, the history of homeopathy shows that the doctors, the homeopaths of the golden era were all allopathic doctors who turned towards homeopathy for a gentler way of cure. So Burnett, Boric, Allens, Herring, Boger, they were all people who knew medicine. And why I stress on this is because when we take a clinical case, when you're taking a case and you're seeing them clinically and you're trying to see, okay, this person, his pain is not in the muscle. It is in the, it's not even in the articular joint. It is in the insertion of the muscle on this area. So when we think of it anatomically, physiologically, and pathologically, and when we're thinking of what happened to this patient for this pathophysiology to get affected, it's that time that these books actually work, because these people knew their stuff. You know, they knew medicine before they did homeopathy. So it's the beauty of how they've been able to get the PQRS, the peculiar symptom of the patient, and write so concise, in such concise manners, and in such what is needed for us to study and memorize is what gives me the high. Like, if the patient comes in, now I treat a lot of arthritis cases, and I ask them, is it a shooting pain? Is it throbbing? Does it feel heavy? Does it feel stiff? I know exactly what is going on inside, you know, and that is what these doctors did. They knew exactly what was getting affected. If you read the books of the past, the classics, it's amazing. It's crazy. How did they understand that the kidney was floating? Or how, that time there was nothing. How do they understand glaucoma? There's so many remedies of glaucoma. Now there's a whole range of tests to do, and you see the field vision, and things like this and that. No, here you just close the eyes and put three of your fingers on top of the eye, and you will know that there's pressure in the eye. The eye feels harder. The clinical understanding of a case, and to understand that this patient who's walking in, okay, his gait is like this, and then you ask him, why are you walking like this? And then when he explains it, and when he explains that, you know, when I lift it, it hurts. It's not when I put it down. When I put it down, it feels better. So these small things tell you exactly which part of what is paining and what was the process or what was the pathophysiology behind it, which made that hurt. And that is written in Boric, Allens, and, you know, understood by Burnett, understood by J.H. Allen, understood by Primer. So that's what I like about these books.
You know, it's testament what you've said as you were saying those names. I was picturing them because we have pictures for most of them. That sheer meticulous effort that was made at that time is such an absolute treasure house for us, because Dr. Samuel Hahnemann himself, of course, started this, and he was extremely meticulous with noting down every single thing. And today, you know, 200 odd years plus, we now, I think you've said it in a most elegant way, because you've, that's the expression, actually, it goes back to the original point of where we started, actually, about gratitude we spoke about. Because we have to show gratitude to them, because what they have done is amazing, and it's never been done before. And such meticulous, and such a meticulous nature. Tell me about this. Tell me how you feel. When do you feel like this? When you're standing, when you're sitting, when you're lying down, you know, when you're eating, when you're sleeping. It's amazing the amount of detail that goes into the proving of homeopathic remedies.
Yes, very true. Very, very true. You know, I think this, I don't know whether this is podcast material, but let me tell you something. I am right now treating a case who has been on the ventilator for 45 days. Okay. Mm. And the patient's sister is a homeopath. So she's been in touch with me, and we've been coordinating, and she helps me by telling me the symptoms, and then I prescribe, and then she gives it. And we've been able to manage a lot of, how can I say, challenging situations, which would have otherwise been fatal. Okay. And now this gentleman is on his way to recovery. He's improving. They've removed the central line today, and we are just waiting for maybe another few days before we can celebrate him coming back, you know, from where he was all these days. The reason I'm mentioning this is because when we understand a case from the medical point of view, and we can play around with the homeopathic remedies, the magic that can be created is just tremendous. You know, the mix of today's education, the mix of today's progress in medicine, in blood tests and in things like that, and also the homeopathic, how can I say, the wisdom of the old and the knowledge of the new, you know, when you mix these two, you can do miracles.
You need to write a book.
Yes.
you have a lot to say, and it's all very, very, it's brilliant. So I would urge you to write something. Start work on it now, and I will chase you every 3 months.
I will try my best. I must compliment you, Arthik. You've made me really comfortable. I was a little scared as to what I'm going to talk about and how this podcast will go. But thank you so much for being such a good listener.
Oh, thank you. That's very kind of you. That's very humbling. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you on today's Homeopathy Health podcast. I wish you well. And of course, I will invite you back later this year, and hopefully we can talk some more.
Yes, I would love to, Arthik. It's been a pleasure. It's been an absolute pleasure. Trust me, I have enjoyed every bit of this.
I do hope you've enjoyed the Homeopathy Health Show here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio. Tune in next time for more things homeopathy, interviews and segments on the healing possibilities that homeopathy can bring you. And don't forget to visit UK Health Radio online at www.ukhealthradio.com to see the many other amazing shows available to listen live and on demand. Or why not download the app from the iOS and Android stores. Until next time, stay safe and take care.